Hello, wonderful Open Heart Project. It is great to see you again. I'm delighted to continue our conversation about spirituality and meditation practice and Buddhism. I thought it might be good to go right back to the foundations, to the very basics of the spiritual journey according to the Buddhist view, because who doesn't need that? Even if you've heard it lots of times, it's really good to get reminders. And even if you've heard it lots of times and have had lots of reminders, every time you or I'll just speak of myself here, hear the foundational teachings, the basic view, I hear something different each time. So whether this is your first time or your first millionth time of hearing about the three yanas or the three stages of the spiritual journey, I invite you to enjoy it. Enjoy it again. Another thing I've noticed about powerful teachings, foundational teachings, is that one can only ever hear them for the first time. Even if you have technically heard them many times, they have a ring of truth and immediacy and presence that is consonant with the first time. So, in any case, what we're going to talk about in the next three videos, this is the first one, is what I'm calling, or what is called, the three yana journey. Yana means vehicle, and the three yanas, or three vehicles, refer traditionally to the three main cycles of Buddhist teachings given by the Buddha during and after his lifetime. But nobody has to be a Buddhist in any way to recognize the inherent logic of these cycles. They may have Sanskrit names or sound Buddhist-y, but the journey that they outline is universal, I would say. So you listen and see what you would say, because that's actually more important than what I would say. So, briefly, the three main cycles are the following. The first cycle, called Hinayana, which is translated sometimes as lesser vehicle, but that sounds like less important, which it is not. It's insanely important. Without the Hinayana teachings and principles, there is no journey. So it is more accurate, I would say, to translate Hinayana, this I heard from the great Pema Chodron, as foundational yana, the foundational vehicle. The foundational teachings are those things without which, no matter what your journey is, Buddhist or atheist or Christian or whatever it might be, without these qualities, there is no journey. We're BSing ourselves. And I'll talk about what those qualities are momentarily. But the first yana focuses on getting your bleep together. On the most basic level, on one hand, like, because you're actually listening to this video, I'm presuming that you live indoors and have electricity and some snacks. So, okay, we're already in fantastic shape. We can hear the Dharma, whatever that Dharma is that speaks to you. Because we are not fighting for survival every minute of the day, there's some sense of, I have a basic situation in hand. I live someplace. I eat food. As far as I know, no one's trying to kill me or take all my things. I can hear the Dharma. So already we're in like an extremely fortunate situation. Congratulations on getting your situation in hand. On an external level. And on an internal level, there are corresponding gestures that we can make that indicate we've got our bleep together. And it doesn't mean you're perfect or I'm perfect. It doesn't mean I've got this all figured out. In fact, that would be an obstacle. Rather, I'm ready. I'm ready to listen. I can listen. I'm not so enmeshed in concept and judgments and beliefs, all of which I possess, by the way, in innumerable quality, that I can't hear something outside of those things. So yay, congratulations on that too. So there's some general sense of I'm ready and I can do it. Whether I will be able to, I don't know, but I could. So there's some sense of stability. Again, not perfect, but enough. The first teachings of the historic Buddha related to this activity of getting your act together so that you can practice. And the very first teachings of the Buddha, which gave rise to the whole entire Hinayana cycle and indeed informs the subsequent cycles, are the Four Noble Truths. Not saying you have to have a perfect understanding of them, but there are certain things that are true about reality. And if we keep denying them or pretending they're not true, then it will be very hard to progress along the path. So this first cycle of teachings, which we're going to talk about in some tiny bit of detail in a moment, what is true? And how do I stabilize enough to practice? This is about me. Because without getting myself in order, I can't really do anything for you. So that first cycle of teachings is about those things. Then what happens when we do create some sense of basic stability? Not perfect. Say that again. Something happens to us as human beings, because this seems to be how we're wired. Again, this has nothing to do with Buddhism. But what happens when there's some sense of, okay, I've basically got something here that I can depend on. Now I can afford to open my heart to others. And in fact, it opens on its own. When we're caught in a battle for survival, understandably and reasonably, we can't think of others. But of course, it would be ill-advised to do so. We have to think about ourselves, because there are threats and dangers. But when threats and dangers are, they're not gone, because we all know they're not gone. But when they're somewhat contained, now I can think about you, which is fantastic for both of us. So this second cycle of teachings, the Mahayana, called greater vehicle, or translated as greater vehicle, not because it's better. I think it's called greater because now we're talking about you and me in the greater world. Not just me, but a bigger situation. Now, what are the teachings that can help me there? So the Mahayana teachings focus very much on that heart opening and on recognizing the interdependence of all phenomena, including you and me, and the interconnectedness that is without exception between us and all phenomena. So the Mahayana teachings are about working with that heart opening on both the relative level, meaning what we would think of, or I would think of as heart opening, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, being of benefit, patience, discipline, all the things that can support me to bring benefit to the world, including my own world. Relative bodhicitta, as it's called, heart opening, and then absolute bodhicitta, or heart absolute love, which is beyond concept, so therefore I cannot define it, but it has something to do with the notion of emptiness and luminosity. Emptiness in this sense is a big concept, even though it's beyond concept, in Buddhism, but it doesn't mean that nothing exists or that all phenomena are void and therefore sort of lifeless. Rather, emptiness, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the Mahayana cycle, is noting that we're not separate from each other. I don't have an independent existence. P.S. I'm right here. Howdy. I'm confused about that. I don't think you're confused about that. But I'm not separate from the people who gave birth to me, my parents, their parents, their parents. The food that I ate somehow created who I am. I didn't get here in a space capsule, as far as I know. So I arose from causes and conditions that are absent them, I wouldn't be here. So I don't have an independent existence yet. Here I am. So heart opening, Mahayana teachings. And then the third cycle called the Vajrayana, or indestructible vehicle. Some people consider it part of the Mahayana, but here we're going to look at it as a separate cycle, are about what is possible for you and me when we have some sense of stability and we know how to love. A profound relaxation is possible in moments that enables us to then see the magic and profundity and sacredness of every moment. So the Vajrayana teachings are about those moments, about the sacred world, about using every possible event and moment and word and experience as the possible moment of awakening from the dream and becoming fully enlightened. So in the Mahayana cycle, enlightenment, all the cycles, by the way, are inseparable. You can't just say, well, I'm going to separate out one of them. They're inseparable and they're circular. They're not graded like this is the beginner, intermediate, advanced. Ixnay on that. They're inseparable. They're equally powerful. They're necessary. And they each have their own sort of view of the journey to enlightenment. In the Hinayana view, many lifetimes. Who knows? Maybe it's this lifetime for you or me. We don't know how many. Second cycle, Mahayana, enlightenment is considered necessary immediately so that I can be of most benefit to others. And there's a commitment within the Mahayana cycle to become a bodhisattva, an awakened being. One makes a vow that's absolutely impossible, yet many have made it, including myself, which is to attain enlightenment in this lifetime, but not to transcend what in the Buddhist view is considered the cycle of birth and death, so rebirth and so on. Keep coming back until all beings are enlightened, every single one. Wish me luck, y'all. And then the third cycle, Vajrayana, as mentioned, enlightenment is considered to be possible right now. In fact, there are 108,000 possible ways to wake up in every moment. Oh, there just went 108,000. Okay, now there's another 108,000. It's now. Now, now, now. Okay, that's the overview of the three yanas and the three yana journey. So we each have to make this journey as spiritual practitioners. Again, whether it's a traditional spiritual practice or just something very personal and unique to you, first we have to establish a foundation. I think that goes without saying. Then every journey talks about the importance of learning to love. And then we see a sacred world. So we're going to talk right now about the key principles in the Hinayana teachings, which it's very brief, so there's only a few more minutes here. So thank you for listening. So what are the qualities without which we're not going anywhere? We're not going on any journey. We're just sort of pretending. The Hinayana teachings are about those qualities, as mentioned. And the first one that I will mention is discipline, which I know sounds scary because everybody's got a lot to do, and or it may sound scary. And everybody thinks they're not disciplined enough, or 99% of everybody I've ever met. And there's this idea that to be disciplined is something onerous. Like, I have to force myself to do things I don't want to do, And if I don't do that, I'm a bad girl or person. And yeah, it's really hard to leave that idea behind, that I'm good if I do this and bad if I do that. But for our purpose of this conversation, it's not about good or bad here. But if we don't have any discipline, it's very hard to be on a journey, because we're just going all different directions, hoping for the best. So discipline here means there's some sense of order. This is what I do. This is my practice, whatever yours is. This is what I'm interested in. This is what I'm studying or contemplating. It doesn't have to be grand. You don't have to meditate for 6 hours a day. But if your practice is, oh, I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes a day, every other day, that's your discipline. That's great. And here, discipline, again, I just want to say, doesn't mean making yourself do the things you don't want to do, although sometimes we have to do that. All discipline here means is coming back. Can you come back? So as a meditator, and if this is your first time meditating, momentarily you will be a meditator too, because I'll give instruction. You sit with yourself as you are, la, 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 breathing. Space out. Happens to everyone. Happens to me constantly, by the way. Just because I've been doing this for decades doesn't mean it's any different than what you're experiencing. You notice that you're spaced out and you let go and you come back to the object of your attention, which in this case is the breath. That gesture coming back is what is meant by discipline. So every time you notice that you're thinking, which is great, you need have to have something to work with. My shoulders are very uneven. You let go and you come back. And every time you do that, it's like doing a curl in the gym. You're flexing the discipline muscle. You're strengthening it. You're getting to know it. You're getting better at it, even, I would say. So that's a place to start. Discipline. There are two more qualities I want to mention. And then we'll practice for a short period where all of these qualities come to life, actually. The second quality that I will mention is renunciation, which also can have baggage, like, oh, I have to give up things that are fun. No, no, you don't. Here, renunciation in the Hinayana view, in the creating a foundation for our journey, means renouncing bullshit, I would say. Renouncing what is non-essential, what is distracting. Now, I am a big fan of distractions from time to time. I like to watch TV. I like to lie on the couch. I like to read silly things. I'm not saying stop doing that. I'm saying, what is in your life that prevents you from paying attention to your inner world, the call of your spiritual journey? What are things you do that just really waste time? Either because you're anxious, and we all are, and I'm not saying you should never waste time, but what are the things that you're throwing in the between you and your path as obstacles? Maybe you have hobbies or habits that you don't really like doing anymore. Maybe you have friendships or relationship commitments with people that you don't really like being in a relationship with anymore. Like, and you know it, not just momentarily disliking, but, oh, this relationship isn't good for me. So renunciation here means renouncing the things that really don't serve and in fact create obstacles. So just something to think about. And then the final quality I'll mention, and probably the most important, is simplicity. Hugely important. When we start on any journey, again, whether it's a traditional journey or a very particularly personal journey, it's very ordinary that we make it complicated. Well, I'm going to practice meditation, let's say in our case, but I'm also going to add some mantras and some, I'm going to combine certain techniques because I like this about that and that about this. I'm going to expect results. And if I don't see them, I'm going to move on after a certain period of time. And of course, you should expect results and you will get results. where we just develop a lot of overly conceptual notions about what it is that we're doing, when actually, as meditators, all we're doing is nothing. We're sitting, we're breathing, and we're being ourselves. You can't minus anything from that equation. I can't take my body out. I can't remove my breath, and I can't stop being who I am. So the practice is so absurdly stripped down, though it has meant details, which again, we'll go over in a moment. It's so stripped down, so simple, that it's hard to believe. And also we hear people say, "I have this experience," or "spirituality means this." And then we get distracted or confused, or I do anyway. So the more simple we can keep it, this is the practice. It has a technique that involves mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of mind. And I'm not doing anything. And I'm actually giving up the idea that I'm going to get somewhere. And I'm just going to be here. That's the practice. It's very simple. So discipline, renunciation of BS, simplicity. These are the foundational qualities emphasized in the Hinayana teachings and throughout the Buddhist path, and I would imagine other paths too, without which, well, I don't know what we're doing. So something to give thought to. Remember, discipline just means coming back. Renunciation means letting go of what doesn't serve you. And simplicity means, in the case of meditation, applying the technique. And rather than having ideas about what your spiritual journey could be, should be, isn't, to instead approach it with curiosity and openness to see what it is, rather than telling it what it ought to be. So there you have it. I hope you found this interesting, useful. Do let me know. I've always loved to hear from you. So we'll begin your practice by just forgetting all that. Not necessary right now. And establish your posture very simply, but particularly. You can be seated on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in the equally spiritual chair or couch. And if so, you can sit cross-legged if you want, or with your feet flat on the floor. And really give your weight what you're sitting on. And feel heavy from the waist down and light from the waist up. At the same time, you're just sitting there. So it's very, very, very simple. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let the belly relax a lot. And let the shoulders relax, settle into their natural position. The chin is tucked a little bit, so it's level with the ground, and the back of the neck feels long. The mouth is closed. Yay! Because you don't have to talk. It's so wonderful to be invited to be quiet, silent, still. So the mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And let all the muscles of speech relax because you don't need them right now. The jaw, the tongue, the throat, and so on. The breath is natural in and out through the nose. There's no breathing technique. You're already expert at breathing. You've been doing it since the moment you were born. So please simply continue. Normal breathing. And the eyes remain open in this practice, and the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 feet or 2.5 meters or less, depending on where your screen is. And let the eyes be soft, with a sense of receiving rather than seeking, if that makes sense. And let the brow relax. And the crown of the head reach up a little bit, while the sit bones continue to reach down, right here on earth. Not trying to get anywhere, rather to be somewhere. Now let your attention rest on the breath, which means feel the body breathe. Feel the inhale and the letting go of the exhale. And let your attention be carried by the breath as if the breath was a hammock that swayed in and out. And you place your mind in the hammock, where apparently it loves to be, and let it be carried. Your mind, of course, will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does, like your eyes see or your ears hear. It's not a problem. There's no effort to quell thinking or change thinking at all. Just let it be what it is. Like birds flying by in the sky. The great majority of your thoughts will come and go on their own, just like birds flying through. But if you notice that you become absorbed in a line of thought to the point where you're no longer attending to your breath, like you flew off, that's actually great. It's not a failure. It's an awakening. You just woke up and saw where your mind was. And as such, you have choices that are missing without that awareness. Notice that you're thinking first. Label that moment silently thinking. Got it. Then let go. It doesn't matter if the thought is vital or silly or vicious or beautiful or mundane. Just doesn't matter right now. Let go. Like you're dropping a pebble into a pond, just gone. Gently come back to your breath and begin again, feeling the body breathe. And that's it. The amount of times that you are allowed to just come back is infinite. So you can relax, and we'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It is wonderful that we can practice together in this way. Thank you for practicing with me. I feel it. And thank you for practicing together. Be well. Stay safe.